Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Craig Moore. What a piece. Beautifully struck home by Craig Moore, and the Australian supporters go wild in Stuttgart.
Why not? Touched by Kalash. Rickson's corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacle. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup. He's
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Yes, hello again. Welcome to episode 33 of Shim, Spider, and so much more. A lot to get through on today's show. Later, our special guest is ex-Socceroo and one-time David Beckham representative in Spain, Andy Bernal. We'll also look back on the weekend's action here and overseas, and we want to thank you, first of all, for your amazing response to our episode last week when the Charlie Miller interview went down an absolute storm. We're now at almost 2,000 Twitter followers, and our download numbers are reflective of that increase as well. So thank you very much. Joining me as ever to review the week are our two boys from the Golden Generation. Both have been larging it up of late. Spider and Maury. Spider, you went and saw the big V-bomber down at his cafe in Zagreb.
Our good's Big Dukes, mate. He's just so cool, calm, collected. He had his big glasses on. He looked like the fly. All I needed was some Mortine. It was brilliant. Mate, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, we get to his cafe, we have our first coffee, and then he says, how about we have a rakia? So we get a rakia going. I said, Duke, you do know it's 12 o'clock. He goes, oh, we'll have one more for the road. About three rakias down, four coffees later. Mate, welcome to Zagreb.
Brilliant. That is absolutely fantastic. And Maury, you've been larging it up as well. You're in Dubai recently, sitting there sipping coffee. I'm not sure about the rakia, along with ex-Manchester United star Odion Ighalo.
Yeah, I don't know whether I can keep up with Spides' effort. But I was in Dubai recently before the lockdowns. Ighalo, I know his agent well. And a lot of what I'm trying to do, Simon, is getting in front of these kind of people to generate business interest. So, it was good.
Absolutely. All right. Looking forward to hearing your views on the weekend's football. So let's get into it with Hard Talk.
Hard Talk.
Hard Talk is brought to you by Streamgate, one of Australia's first live streaming companies operating since 2008. They focus on virtual and hybrid events, broadcasting to unlimited online audiences worldwide by either a secure private stream page or publicly on social media. Live streaming allows social online engagement as viewers are able to communicate back to the presenters in real time while social distancing. So, should you require a small personal event or business level webcast, then please go to streamgates.com.au or you can find them on Instagram. Well, guys, let's start this week with the big news of a few days back. Spider, I guess we should ask you. Tony Popovic has followed you out of the door at Zante just a week after you left. Have you spoken to Popper? What on earth happened?
Yeah, look, absolute shock, to be honest with you. Mate, he rang me up the day after the match and it was just a basic conversation. I said, you're enjoying your day off after a good win on the weekend? And he said, mate, I'm joining you. And it was shock. And I could hear in his voice the disappointment. Obviously, yeah, I left 2 weeks before Popper, hadn't lost a game, and I don't know why I was let go. But no problem. That's a goalkeeper coach on your bike. But, you know, Popper was brought there on a project. He's a leader there to bring a culture to the club. Won 3 of his last 4 matches. They were 4 points off first with a game in hand against a team down the bottom of the table at home. So realistically, 1 point behind after 9 games. The club was in a fantastic position. And to let him go makes me sort of wonder, was there an agenda there by letting me go first and then Popper after the great results that he had? Was there an agenda there? Because you know what? He was there for a project that was to get the club promoted to the Super League. And the club was in a perfect position. And to get rid of him like that is a real strange one. I don't know why. I don't have any reasons as to why. I've read some stupid tweets by Lucy Zelich saying the player didn't want to play for him. Mate, what a load of bollocks that is. It's disappointing. It's got to be disappointing.
The rumor is that the supporters weren't particularly happy with the style of play. I don't know whether that's true. My final question on this one, Spider, is obviously he brought in a lot of Aussie players, including his 2 sons as well. Where does all this leave them? They must be a little bit nervous about what's going to occur in the future, I guess, those Aussie guys.
Look, there'll be a lot of shattered players that Pop has left. There was staff as well that were let go. These players have come there on the same project that Popper was brought there. He was brought there on a project, and you would have thought that having that opportunity to get through the season, to get the team back up to Super League, that these players would get the opportunity as well. Now, look, I don't know where their heads would be. As for their sons, as for Popper's sons, you know, this is becoming a really ridiculous thing. Gubby is the youngest of the 2 sons who wasn't under contract. So it had nothing to do with his sons. Christian's the older one who was a squad player like everyone else in the side. So, I mean, I don't think that had anything to do with it. Style of play, Simon, let me tell you, the Greek second division, out of the 90 minutes of football that you play, you really play about 30 minutes because a lot of the time is actually spent slowing the game down, wasting time, because teams find it very hard to actually play out 90 minutes of football at a high intensity. So it's a very tricky league and a very difficult league. And the club itself was in a fantastic position. That's the hardest thing that I shake my head because it's disbelief, because they were in such a fantastic position to get promoted.
Interesting. I'm sure we will see Tony Popovich and indeed Kevin Muscat reemerge at some point. Maybe even here in Australia. Who knows? Maury, let's move back home and focus on the A-League. What a brilliant weekend of entertainment, to be fair, that the A-League has provided. Highlights of which was the crazy game in Melbourne on Saturday. 7 goals, 1 red card, and a 95th-minute winner for Western United.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a very entertaining round of A-League games, which is great to see. You know, for the neutral, obviously, you know, a lot of goals were scored, and that started with Perth, who had a very good win over Brisbane, and that's what 18 goals now they've scored in.
Yeah, which is a new A-League record. Yeah,
6 games, which is incredible, and Diego Castro and Fornaroli coming up trumps again, Simon. Now, I mean, Diego Castro, what a quality player. And even when you don't have the legs, which we've seen previously with Del Piero and the impact that he made, but you have that now, Diamante is the same. I mean, Diego Castro is absolutely a genius. And it was a big result for Perth and a big performance from Diego Castro, their main man.
Spider, just on the Melbourne victory, Western United game, victory, of course, will be utterly shattered to have lost that derby match, compounded by the fact that Wellington Phoenix defeated the Newcastle Jets on Sunday, which leaves the victory, the biggest club in the country for my money, bottom of the A-League again. Where does that leave Grant Brebner with 3 games to come against Melbourne City, Adelaide United and Sydney FC, which are the three biggest of the season for victory in any campaign?
First and foremost, it was an unbelievable football match to watch. As a neutral, it was unbelievable. What I will say about Melbourne victories, you know, Brebner got a lot of slack the last couple of weeks, and they come out and they fought for him and they won the previous match. And you know what? They put in an unbelievable performance in this match as well. I thought Western United were the better side. When Western United got the player sent off, Uskok really brought victory back into the game. And victory then really started to turn the screws on to Western United. And Western United showed courage and the fight. And Rudes made some top substitutes, some real brave substitutes to win the match.
And Spides, what I love to see, and I'm sure a lot of people would have loved to have seen, and I know it's not the end of the season, but the celebrations from Rudes when that final goal goes in, the way that Western United celebrated as a team, I mean, that was great to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? That's emotion. That's raw emotion getting caught up with the football match. And that's what we want. That's why we're all sick of VAR. You just want to see that. You want to see the raw emotion of celebration. Look, for victory, absolute despair because they fought unbelievably hard to get back into the match. But as I said, Rudes made a real brave decision with his substitutes, brought on an 18-year-old Nick Milanovic when the game with 10 men, he was the kid who put his head in where a lot of players wouldn't have put his head in, and the ball ricocheted back and they scored from it. So well done, Western United. Well done, Victric, for a fantastic match. And that's perfect for the A-League.
You skillfully avoided answering the question about Grant Brampton, but anyway, they are bottom of the A-League at the moment. A couple of other teams who are not in the best of form at the moment, more including your old side, Brisbane Roar. They were top of the table in early February and have now taken just 1 point from nine after that defeat against Perth, and they scored only the one goal. All of a sudden, it's all dried up for them.
Yeah, they haven't looked as good, and probably fair to say, Simon, they've probably come up against teams with a little bit more structure and organisation. So yeah, they work quickly out of the traps. But as I kind of suggested, I think at the start of the campaign, I think that, you know, they'll be mid table, but they've got to bounce back, and they've certainly got players and still play a decent style of football where they will create chances with Scotty McDonald and, you know, Dylan Wenzel-Halls. They've got goal scorers in the team. And I think they can bounce back. But and that's good. It's been interesting. The A-League, I've really enjoyed the games and the goals. And I think it's given us plenty to talk about.
Sure has. Sydney FC, Spider, losing again to MacArthur by the only goal. Another one for Matt Derbyshire. They're struggling a bit at the moment. The reigning champions, no win in three.
It's incredible when goals dry up. They're not playing bad, Sydney FC. They just can't score. It's incredible. But MacArthur, you've got to give them credit. They've got a very good side. They're gritty. They've got a goal scorer in Derbyshire. And what about the play to get to the goal, Maury? Help us out, commentator. Susueta?
Susueta. Markel Susueta.
Mate, wasn't that tremendous skill? And that's what you expect from your foreigners, don't you, Maury?
Yeah, Spides, I am going to agree. I thought it was tremendous skill, in particular when he was on the sideline, his feet and the way he shifted the ball and changed direction. He runs into another defender that I think probably, I forget who the defender was, gets caught square and really sort of gives himself up far too easily, but take nothing away. It was a fantastic run, still with the awareness to be able to pick somebody out. It was a great action, it really was.
One more on the A-League before we move on. The Western Sydney Wanderers lost their seven-game unbeaten record on Saturday, losing to Adelaide. Craig Goodwin making a difference already, scoring less than 2 minutes into his return. Spider, we've got a question for you that's coming via Facebook, actually, from Kim Williams. Now, I don't know whether this is fair, but this is the question. Why does the Wanderers goalkeeper Daniel Margush continue to punch the ball instead of trying to catch it? He keeps putting us under pressure, says Kim. Do you agree with that assessment? Is it fair?
Yeah. I don't know why a lot of these younger keepers, they do parry a lot. Maybe it's just not confidence to catch the ball dead. You'll see as you get older, you become more confident to catch those balls. Don't forget, it's Daniel's first year. as a number one goalkeeper. So, and he's not playing for a small club. He's playing for a big club. So I think the kid's doing, I think he's doing well. I think a lot of the young goalkeepers in the A-League are doing well at the moment.
Sydney FC doing particularly well in the W League. They're closing in on the Premiership. Another big win for them midweek against Perth Glory. Unfortunately, they had to do it without Teresa Pelias, who couldn't get time off work as a school teacher. That really sort of underlines, I guess, where we're at the game, although COVID has got a big part to play in that. You wouldn't normally play a midweek game away in Perth, would you? But something that needs looking at, perhaps, ahead of the home Women's World Cup in 2023. Still off the field, guys. The APL board on December the 31st, it just occurred to me this week, it was announced this board was going to be inaugurated and made up of five club directors, three independent directors, one FA appointee. Does anybody know who they are or where it's at? Why is this all taking so long?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a clue. Maury, come on, Maury. This is your department, son.
Come on, Maury, mate. I'm over in Scotland as well, mate. I'm not in Australia. But you're right, Simon. I haven't heard anything too much about this. Mm. Obviously, with the restructure and all that sort of stuff, giving us an idea in terms of, I guess, what they want to put in place. But, you know, we haven't heard anything. Hopefully, whoever the people that are going to be there, that are going to be involved in this kind of thing, are the right people to continually push and challenge and take the game forward and give it a better future.
The wheels turn very slowly, don't they, in football in Australia? There's an awful lot of talk, but it'd be great to see some action. Unfortunately, we're not going to see the Socceroos in action at the Copa America Spider during the off-season. They had to pull out. I guess they didn't have much choice, yeah, really, given the Olympics and the World Cup qualifiers that they still have to play. But, geez, it's a pity, isn't it? That would have been such a great tournament to be in.
Yeah, geez, Arnie will be pulling the little hair that he's got left out, because that was such a fantastic tournament to get invited to. Would have been fantastic matches for Australia. Look, when was the last time we played, guys? Was it a year ago?
Yeah, it was against Jordan, November 2019, I think.
You know, like, even for Australia to not have the opportunity to go and play in such a prestige tournament, it just shows that the game itself is in big trouble. And these qualifiers that we got coming up, gee, I hope they can do a hub or something, because it really would be a pity not to be able to play games as a national team player, and for Arnie as a national team coach.
Well, that first game is looming on the horizon against Nepal, the away leg of that series, if you like, which is at the end of March. Final one. Before we move on to overseas matters, the NPL season started in New South Wales and Victoria this weekend. A big win for your former club, Spider, Sydney United, beating Olympic 1-0 at Belmore. That's always a big rivalry, that one.
It is. It was. You know what? I had a good look at all the games there. A big side, Sydney United, two grand finalists, Rockdale. They both got up. Some very entertaining games. Sydney FC, the youngsters, caused a boil over against Marconi. A stalemate between the other two big boys, Blacktown City and Apia. So, you know what's beautiful about it? You have a look at all the State League games. Have a look at all the crowds. It's brilliant to see so much interest in the game. People just want to watch football. Given the right product, they will turn up.
That's why we need a national second division. Down in Victoria, incidentally, the Dandy Derby between Dandenong Thunder and Dandenong City ended in a 1-1 draw. And I think there were a fair few people watching that particular local encounter as well. Thanks for the moment, guys. Let's head overseas. London Calling.
London Calling.
Go further with the Australian College of Physical Education. With an overall graduate employment rate of 90.1% and an extensive industry partnerships network, ACPE ensures you have unrivaled access, learning and support throughout your degree. Head to acpe.edu.au to enrol today and start studying in March. ACPE, where ambition meets industry excellence.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, let's start in your neck of the woods, Maury. Neil Lennon resigning as manager of Celtic. Rumours that Wayne Rooney might be in the frame to take over. What can you tell us about what is going on at Celtic Park? I guess in some ways, not really a surprise that he's gone.
No, it's not. I mean, look, it's been a terrible season for Celtic. And obviously for Neil Lennon, unfortunately, he's the face of the football club. So the decision was certainly no surprise, Simon, that Neil Lennon he stood down himself to give Celtic the opportunity to try and find what they believe to be the right manager to take the club forward. Wayne Rooney, Frank Lampard, Rafa Benitez, mate, the name's Eddie Howe. They're all coming out. An interesting one, just live while we've been doing the podcast, is ex-player Paul Lambert mutually agreed a termination with Ipswich. So again, whether that's something that we hear over the coming days, Simon. But look, Celtic won't make any rushed decisions. They've got John Kennedy in control, and I'm sure he'll see out the season. But Celtic will be working hard behind the scenes to try and get the right man to hopefully have a better season next season.
And here's a quiz question before we move away from Scotland, Maury. Behind Celtic over the last decade, who's the most successful team in Scotland?
Look, I'm going to give you the right answer because obviously Johnston won the cup final today against Livingston, which makes them the second most successful side. Yeah,
that's unbelievable, isn't it? The second most successful side in Scotland behind Celtic is St Johnston. Because they won
did
the
you
Scottish
see
Cup.
His face? Did you see his face when he was going to answer that? It was like, mate, Family Feud. I know the answer. Just come to me. He didn't even have to phone a friend. He didn't have to do anything.
But Spides, what I do know also is that 55 titles is coming home to Rangers this season.
Congratulations to St Johnstone. They won the Scottish League Cup on Sunday, defeating Livingston. And just to underline that, because they won the Scottish Cup in 2014, and Rangers, of course, have been in a massive trough over the last few years, they are the second most successful side in Scotland over the last decade, which I think is extraordinary. Also extraordinary, perhaps in many ways, Spider, south of the border, Pep Guardiola's comments after Manchester City beat Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Champions League this week. He was asked why his team is so good. And he answered pretty honestly. He said, we've got the money to buy the best players. Although, to be fair, he has qualified that since in the Manchester Evening News by saying, well, all the other big clubs have done the same as well. But it's nice to hear that honesty, isn't it?
Well, that's what the big clubs can do. They can go out and get the best players. It's simple as that. I mean, I would love to see Pep Guardiola go to the A-League or go somewhere to the New South Wales State League and see what it's like to coach at that level when you can't get the kind of players you want.
Be a bit different, wouldn't it? incidentally, this morning, Chelsea drawing with Manchester United 0-0. Here's Chelsea's bench. Alonso, £24 million. Kepa, the keeper, £72 million. Timo Werner, £50 million. Kai Havertz, £75 million. Jorginho, £57 million. Christian Pulisic, £58 million. Emerson, £18 million. And Zouma, £12 million. That's £366 million sat on Chelsea's bench. And yet it's only an interesting stat when it's Manchester City.
I was going to say that because I worked the Manchester City West Ham game and we were having the same discussion about Manchester City's bench. We're like, is this potentially a bench that could possibly win the Premiership? It was like the bench was incredible. You know, the depth that these clubs have. You touched on, that's incredible what you've just read there for Chelsea. Tuchel has made an impact though. I mean, he's undefeated, isn't he, domestically?
Yep.
0-0 with Manchester United. There was a bit of a talking point over a handball incident, which is getting a little bit of airtime over here at the moment and potentially about how it was looked at and what the referee might or might not have said. So a little bit more to come out from the actual game.
It was a boring game.
Yeah.
On the continent of Europe, Manchester City beating West Ham, of course, 20 consecutive wins now for City, even though they weren't at their best. And they are now 12, or is it 11 points clear of Manchester United. Elsewhere in continental Europe, Bayern Munich looking very ominous. Big 4-1 win over Lazio away in the Champions League. Big wins as well for Chelsea. What a goal from Olivier Giroud. And for Real Madrid in the Europa League, Spider, the last 16 draw has been made. Manchester United are going to face your old team, AC Milan, and Mori Slavia Prague will face Rangers. A couple of interesting ties for you guys to discuss.
Some really good matches. Some really good matches coming up in the last 16. Look, Milan's, I said there, Milan's looked dead the last couple of weeks. And funny enough, they come out tonight and they win away to Roma. So, look, I just can't work it out. Look, if I was being honest, you would think on form alone, Man United would be too strong. But you just don't know. Like, in 3 days, they play another match. There could be injuries. You don't know how these players are recovering. It's a real difficult one.
Spides, I think that's probably the game of the round of 16. Man United, yeah. AC Milan. I mean, Rangers, Slavia Prague. Look, I mean, good test for them. You know, Leicester obviously didn't manage to get by Slavia Prague, so they'll certainly be a very, very good team. But when you look at potentially the draw and who Rangers could have got, I know they would have loved an English side because the press here would have absolutely ate that up.
The Battle of Britain it would have become again.
And to be fair, it would have been fantastic because, you know, I would be interested to see how Rangers would fare against the so-called better British teams, English teams at the moment. But I think this is a nice draw for Rangers and a draw that potentially they can progress again.
Mm. Okay.
Tricky one.
Yeah, it is tricky. Before we leave this segment, a little look at Asia. Start of the J-League and K-League this weekend just gone. A losing start for Ange Postecoglou as his Yokohama F. Marinos team went down 2-0 to Kawasaki Frontale. Aussie interest in the K-League, of course. Terry Antonis with Suwon. Jason Davidson with Ulsan. Alex Grant Pohang. He made his debut off the bench against Incheon in a 2-1 win. Harrison Delbridge also made his debut as a substitute for Incheon on that one. And the interesting news this week, Maureen, you alerted me to this, out of China, where the reigning champions Jiangsu Suning have announced they will cease operations just 3 months after winning the championship. What on earth is going on there?
And immediately.
Yeah, like not tomorrow, today. We're gone.
And these are also the owners of Inter Milan, if I'm right. Yeah, I mean, so this is incredible news. And I guess when you kind of dig a little bit deeper, Simon, it's a real worry that at that level and with the amount of money that is behind these kind of people, that they feel that they're having to act and do something like this, you know, it kind of shows you how tough, I guess, you know, financially it kind of is across the board in terms of, you know, the impact of COVID. And, you know, financially, it must have played absolute havoc with a lot of clubs. And for them to feel that they needed to make that kind of decision, I couldn't believe it when I was reading it. I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
And throws everything up in the air ahead of the new season in the Chinese Super League. Do they replace them? Do they play with a team short? Is there a replacement team to come out of Jiangsu? Who knows? Watch this space. All right, thanks for the moment, guys. Time for us to head into our final segment. And we have got another fascinating guest awaiting us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Canberra in 1966, and after spending his early days with Canberra City and attending the AIS in the early 80s, he headed overseas to Spain, the nation of his heritage, to play for Jerez. Later spells followed with Sporting Gijón and Albacete on loan before he rocked up in England with first Nottingham Forest and then Ipswich Town. He returned back to Australia in 1989 to play for Sydney Olympic, where he spent 5 years before giving the UK another crack in 1994. This time his stay was much more permanent, and he racked up nearly 250 appearances for Reading. He also played 21 times for Australia and later found fame as David Beckham's personal representative during his time with Real Madrid. He's about to release his autobiography entitled Riding Shotgun, being launched in April. It's a big podcast welcome to Andy Bernal. How are you, Birch? Everybody knows you as Birch.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm pleased I'm on the show. It's always an honour to be in good company. So just thank you. Thank you. It's looking forward to having a nice chat this morning. I haven't spoken to the boys for a while. So we're part of a illustrious club is a bit egotistical, isn't it? But we're part of a club that it's a Socceroo club, and we're there for each other all the time, you know, at the end of the day.
Let's start back at the beginning, which is as good a place as any. A young kid of Spanish background, growing up in Canberra. Did your family give you that love of football? And who was your team that you supported growing up?
Well, you know, I grew up in Canberra, which was, if you played football, it was Wogball. It was a pretty, Canberra back then wasn't a cool place if you were a migrant, if you're a Wog. So I kind of wanted to play rugby league. I played more rugby league than football. Obviously, at home, everything was football, you know, coming from a Spanish background. But I was probably a better rugby league player than a footballer. The two names going around at the time on the rugby scene in Canberra were a guy called David Campese and myself. And a chance meeting with Johnny Warren. I think it was under 15s game or something like that. He said the Socceroos need a guy like you, and that's kind of how it went, or led more into being more serious about football. But of course, Spanish background, the family loves football, loves bullfighting, loves Rafa. So the wife loves Rafa.
as they all do, Bertie.
Yeah. So that was kind of it was football. Look, I love football. You know, it'd be stupid to say I don't. But I grew up, and there's an argument and a different conversation for all the academy stuff going on right now. But I grew up with no academy. I grew up playing cricket, athletics in the summer, rugby league, rugby union, AFL, and football, soccer, and from that, you kind of make of it what you want. You put the picture together and you go out and you choose something and you try and be successful. So that was it. And there was always a burning desire to either go to Spain or to England once a decent level had been achieved. And, with regard to my team, I've never really been a fan, but, you know, the Leeds United side of the Billy Bremner era was an amazing side. I ended up playing with the son of Eddie Gray, Stuart Gray at Reading, and he told me some stories that were just amazing. And they were, I suppose, they were the first British team that played in all white like Real Madrid. You know, so that captivated me, and I'd go up the road and didn't have much money, so I'd nick a shoot magazine and try and make sure it was the one with the Leeds kind of poster in the middle. So that was it. If I had a team, it was Leeds United.
Well, it shows how much of a football head I am that I've only just realised that when you said Rafa, you meant Rafa Nadal and not Rafa Benitez. I was worried that your missus fans into Rafa Benitez.
No, she's not into Rafa Benitez.
just in terms of heroes, growing up, and not necessarily overseas ones. And I read as I was doing my research for this chat that you grew up sort of watching a bit of Croatia Deakin and being involved in that club, and that there were two Argentines, Gabriel Wilk and Victor Fernandez, who sort of became your, not just your idols, but your mentors as well. Is that right?
Well, it's kind of right. I grew up watching Canberra, Croatia, but I also watched the local Italian club, the local Spanish club. My uncle played for them. And Victor Fernandez and Gabby were from Argentina. And I suppose for us young kids, coming through then, the education was more about little things that they would tell you in the art of defending or attacking, or just, you know, real small things that if you then were able to ingest them and turn them into something positive, would end up and lead you to become a better player, capable of playing on international stages. So, and I think it's a little, it's a thing that's missing now in our football. As the older migrants have retired and got old and some departed, we're missing that experience, that know-how, that what they call in Argentina viveza, the street smart. With not a lot of ex-soccerers kind of going back into the game, it's pretty stale, you know, the information that the kids are getting, the education that they're getting, you know. And it's something that is as simple as something illegal. There's a couple of Sydney FC under 16s defenders, I was showing them not long ago how to step on someone at a corner, this, and they say they can't jump. And both of them go, that's illegal. Both of them go, that's illegal. Are you kidding me?
They're all little tricks of the trade, aren't they, Birchie?
Oh, you know, and to be honest with you, the 2 years that I spent in Spain, the first 2 years that I spent in Spain, and that covered playing 72 games on loan to Albacete and Jerez. It was Sporting Gijón that I signed for, Simon, just to correct you, I'm sorry. And I learned so much just from old pros. It was amazing just watching them strike a ball. I was lucky. I came through an AIS with Jimmy Shoulder and Ron Smith. Fantastic men, fantastic coaches. So I had a good grounding. But, you know, that, yeah, the learning of great players when you're there live was fantastic.
Andy, you were the first Aussie to play in Spain, which probably not an awful lot of people know. You played at all the great grounds, I'm led to believe, yeah. Camp Nou, the Bernabeu. Which ones were your favourites?
Growing up, I was always a Real Madrid fan. That's kind of, you know, if you're from Spain, you choose one, Barcelona or Real Madrid. And for me, it was Real Madrid. And to play at the Bernabeu, how many years ago was it? A long time ago, 30-something years ago. And I remember marking a guy called Flemming Poulsen, a Danish international that went on to play for, I think, Borussia Dortmund. He was a good player, and Real Madrid had signed him. He was 17, 18. They signed him like all the teams do now. They just sign a million players and kind of loan them out and farm them out. But for me, more than playing at the Bernabeu, it was having my mum and dad there. For a dad, for a guy that was a Bilbao supporter, for a guy that had to leave his country post-World War II, through famine, couldn't eat, seeking a better life, for his son, an Australian, to be the first guy to go and play in that country, go back and play in that country at the Bernabeu, is for him almost incomprehensible. But, you know, a beautiful moment, and more so in Bilbao, where, after military service, he would work, but he didn't have money to go watch his favourite team play. And upon returning, we played against Bilbao, and my uncle lived up there, and kind of suddenly they all went VIP from not being able to afford anything to having good seats in the house. But it was a very special moment, and I'm sure the boys have lived their particular ones. That's kind of the migrant story of my book. What are the chances? A guy migrates from Spain, his son becomes the first Aussie to play in Spain. And it's not like it's a...
Firstly, a quick one, mate. That game that you played at the Bernabeu, how many shadows were you chasing?
Oh, mate, I think the score, we lost 2-0, but I can't remember. I just remember watching.
You were playing but watching.
Yeah, I tell you, it was a little bit like... Did you guys play? No, I don't think you did. The Socceroo match against Argentina when Redondo, it was a pre-USA World Cup.
Oh, we're younger than you, Bertie, mate. Yeah, we weren't around yet.
at the River Plate, Redondo, it was like watching, I don't know, he was in slow motion. Watching him was like slow motion, but he was going quicker than the rest of us. I think he let about 10 of us out after the game, weighty, the whole lot. Everyone came out of his pocket after the. It was amazing. And Real Madrid are a bit like that at their ground. Like Barcelona at their ground, iconic places, iconic theatres of football. And you know what? You sometimes think, I wish I'd have played for that team or this team or that team. But, you know, when you look back, as you get older, and you kind of think, wow, you know, you played at the Bernabeu, you played at the Camp Nou, you played at a full Valencia Stadium. You know, that's the first game after I left the AIS. The first game my parents ever saw me play was 70,000 at Mestalla. You know, and that's
one of the best stadiums I've played at as well, Bertie.
Yeah,
unbelievable stadium.
And in an era where we didn't have mobile phones, we didn't have WhatsApp, you know, social, none of that. Like, I'd write a letter every now and then, and so I hadn't seen my parents like for a year and a half. It's madness, like.
Different world, hey? Different world. Yeah, yeah. Andy, I just wanted to move on from Spain and talk about the fact that you left there, I think because of the possibility of you having to do military service and move to England. I don't know whether that's correct. You can tell us whether it is or it isn't. And then you joined Nottingham Forest briefly under Brian Clough. That must have been an interesting experience. But you didn't play for the first team, or at least the stats don't reflect that. What happened there?
No, there's a story to that. So I left Spain not because of a possibility. I got called up to do Spanish military service. And kind of part of the whole thing of going to Spain, which if I did it again, I probably should have informed myself a little better. But I had a Spanish passport, thinking that with that I would be able to play as a Spaniard in Spain. Because as a defender, very difficult. Back in those days, the FIFA regulations were that you could only have two foreigners before the whole UEFA thing. So, you know, all the Spanish teams in the Liga 1 and Liga 2 would go for a winger, striker, a 10. Very, very rarely would they sign a defender to be a foreign, to take up a foreign import spot. So through all that, having the Spanish passport, it still didn't help me because I'd played for Australia at youth level, and back in those days, if you played at youth level or under 23's level, you kind of got stuck with that nation. It then changed. So I got stuck with Australia, even though I had a Spanish passport, and I got called up for Spanish military service. So they wanted me to fight for their country, but not let me play as a Spaniard for their country. So it I got the notification that I had to be at certain barracks in Madrid. My dad went down with me and he said, look, you know, he's prepared to do military service for a year if you let him play as a Spaniard, because it's impossible for him to stay here. So, and they said, no. Well, basically the general said, it's really in the hands of the Spanish FA. And they were going according to antiquated FIFA regulations, which really put an end to, that was a killer blow. That put an end to 72 games on the trot, starting 11, you know, in Spain. You know, I was headed back to Sporting Gijon, but it didn't happen. But the 2 years that I was loaned out, I was the youngest foreigner to ever play in Spain at the time. As a defender, which was a kind of accolade in itself. And then, so I left. I left Spain, but it was, I had to escape. If you get caught and you don't do military service, you get put in a military prison for 2 years. So dad got me out and landed in Nottingham. Friend was doing university there. And he said, what are you going to do? You know, back those days, you didn't really want to come back to Australia, and there was nothing, you know, there was not much here. Now, you know, the boys have got kind of easy escape back into the A-League. there it was just, man, I can't go back home. I was thinking of playing rugby league for Hull Kingston Rovers and Wigan. everything was thinking of everything. And I sat there one day and I said, I'm in Nottingham Forest are here. I'm going to go in and ask Cluffy for a trial. Like, I don't think anyone has ever gone in off the street and asked him for a trial. And so I turned up, but I'd done 7-8 weeks because I knew if I got through the door, I knew if I got past, I think it's Archie Gemmell. Maury had known better. Gemmell was his number two, wasn't it? Yeah, I think Archie was his number two. And I got past him and he said, I'll get you in his office. And he turned around and he said, fucking good luck. Good luck. Like in his Scottish accent. Like, I was like, it wasn't good. But he got me in the door and Cluffy was sensational. And I'd love to tell you that first meeting. And when I left the office, I'd love to tell you that I can't because it'll ruin that part of the chapter. But it's an amazing, the one thing is I said, would you like references? My two coaches in Spain played for Real Madrid. They have 6 European Cups and as players, and I can give you their number. And he goes, well, that'd be no use. I can't speak Spanish. And then, and then he says, if you hadn't played where you're telling me you played, you wouldn't be in here, son. So he obviously saw something. And then within 15, 20 minutes of that and the story that goes with it in the book, he had me sat in between Des Walker and Neil Webb. And he said, those two will look after you. And if you get a chance, kick them. So the Forest thing was, you know what? I went in, did pre-season and stuck by Des Walker everywhere he went, running, whatever we did, and impressed enough to sign it and played 3 months of resi games there. But I was never going to get that Desi and Neil Webb in the two positions that I like to play. But to be fair to Cluffy, he liked me a lot. And I don't know, for whatever reason, but he said, son, you're too good for my reserves. I'm going to make a phone call and you'll debut very shortly in England.
And that was Ipswich.
Yeah. And he made a phone call to John Duncan, who was the manager of Ipswich Town. And yeah, I went down there and basically, I said to Cluffy, I won't let you down, Gaffer. And he said, don't let yourself down. So that was kind of it. So for me, you know, you kind of, that's a big thing, I think. You know, it's some people get more caps, some people, you know, Dave and I think are the only Aussies to have been signed by arguably the greatest manager in British history.
Mm-hmm. And, that's what I was going to say to you. What was he like as a man?
Oh, amazing. You've all seen some of the stuff on YouTube and stuff. It's that and more. So he would not part, you know, all these coaching courses they have now, pro license, A license, D license, Z license. He would not pass one. Like, it's impossible. He would not pass one. But, and rarely, there's a bit in the book where he grabs me at halftime as I'm going out for the second half against Derby County. It's a reserves match. It's intense stuff up there. Derby and Forest, it's the local. And he grabs me before we run out onto the pitch. And he says, I need more from the team. And I need more from you. And his next question is, what kind of ice cream do you like? What flavour ice cream do you like? Yeah, I'm not going to go anymore because it's quite funny and motivating, but it was kind of the first time that I realised that top-level management, you know, it's more the psychological kind of end of it and empowering people and, you know, creating lieutenants, you know, that'll, you know, do whatever for you. It's a far greater factor than just the football. He knew his football, but, you know, again, there was no, you know, you go down, I went to a Joey's, a camp, you know, a year or two ago down at the AIS, I was confused. Like, there were more cones, flags, bibs, balls. I couldn't see the pitch. Like, yeah, it was like Hong Kong Airport at 3 a.m. Yep. And these kids, they're great. They've got all these flags and they check off, blah, 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 blah. Comes to the game, one of them cops an elbow in the teeth, doesn't know what to do. Yeah, true. Yeah, doesn't know what to do. So Cluffy was the opposite to all of that. Warm up, walk his dog around the pitch. He would pattern a play, nothing. He'd just say, tomorrow we're playing a 4-4-2. If you don't know how to play a 4-4-2, stay home. and put the team up, and you go, that's the team, 4-4-2. If you don't know how to play it, stay home.
Different era. Andy, you had to come home really to establish yourself properly in first team again. And that was with Sydney Olympic, a 5-year stint. And you won the grand final in your first season against Marconi, which must have been a great memory.
Yeah. That was also a not so good a memory leaving England as well. I got deported. I think Bosnic and I are the only two Socceroos to ever be deported from England. You can do maybe some.
And Bert, you're a first for everything.
Yeah, I know.
Records, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like only got a few caps, but a lot of firsts. So I got deported because, like, when I was in Spain, I had the Spanish passport, but they weren't in the Euro. And I didn't have enough A caps at the time. So I'd worked out when I was 16, 17 in Canberra that I thought ahead and I thought, if I go to England, how am I going to get an English passport? Or years ago, you'd think of going and stealing a dead kid's name to get a passport. So I worked out that you could get a part-time working visa stamped on entry into the UK, but it was meant for backpackers, for Commonwealth citizens going over. So I walked in. I went in from Spain before I went to Forest, and the guy says, what are you doing here? I said, I just work in restaurants and pubs and that, and do a bit of cooking and stuff. Yeah, just crap. Anyway, he stamps it. Thank you. Show it to the FA. Bang, see you later. Play debut for Ipswich Town. Get offered a 3-year deal by John Duncan and come back to Australia upon return. Guy at customs goes, mate, Port Monroe, part-time work. So he said, you got 24 hours to get your stuff. You got 24 hours to get your stuff and F off out of this country and you'll never come back.
Wow.
And wow. So that's why a couple of my teammates at Ipswich Town go, thank God that happened. We got testimonials. So we were in the same position. So a couple of them ended up, having 10, 12-year careers where maybe I would have established myself there. But, yes, so I came back to Australia. And kind of when you've started to play at decent levels in Europe, it's – and I don't say it in a disrespectful way, but you kind of come back here and it's demotivating but it was what it was. I was lucky to have a guy called Eddie Thompson batting for me and he wanted me and he said all the right things, played for Aberdeen, he knew Fergie, the whole lot, and he encouraged me to kick people. He said, the first 5 minutes it's free, you won't get booked, I want you to do damage.
You would have loved it back then, eh, Birchie? Because there was no send-offs there. You actually had to murder someone to get a yellow card.
Oh, the first 15, 20 minutes, murder. and there was no VAR, no videos, no this, no that. Now you can't do it. You can't touch anybody. If you look at someone, you get booked. It's gone completely the other way. But I did enjoy my time at Olympic, and I learned a lot from Tomo. Real simple stuff. It's so basic that, again, you can overcomplicate things. Bert, get the ball out of your feet. If Viduka's on, hit him in the chest. It's pretty simple. Yeah. If you can see Viduka, hit his chest. and Kewell and Cahill will run off him. It's pretty simple.
Andy, yeah. you got your chance to go back to England again in 1994 with Reading, playing at Wembley in your first season in a playoff final that you lost after extra time to Bolton Wanderers. But that was to be the start of a long and fruitful partnership between you and that club. And you must have finally got your working visa, I gather.
Well, ironically,
don't tell me you didn't.
No. Ironically, the passport that made me have to leave Spain got me back in to England because they were in the Euro.
Yeah.
Seriously.
What an adventure.
I can't make this up. Like, if I tell people in a bar or something, I go, this guy's nuts. He's had so much ice. He's off the planet. Yeah, like, seriously, you cannot make these kind of things up. But they happen that way. And it was at a time where I was in a position where I was working as a ranger at Woollahra Council. Anybody that's lived in Sydney goes kind of from Rushcutters Bay to Dover Heights, Watson's Bay, and the rangers are kind of council policemen from everything. So we'd help the lifeguards, the whole lot. So it was a real good job. I was comfortable at Sydney Olympic, and I was 28, you know, and you're playing kind of semi-pro part-time football, almost a decent standard. And I'd kind of resigned myself to, you know what, this is going to be me. And so it wasn't, you know, kind of that I was seeking it. But I was out one night after a match at the Iguana Bar in King's Cross, 1 a.m.
That's a shock.
Yeah, that's a shock. Mick Hickman rolls up. Yeah, Hickey rolls up and he goes, "We're looking for a fullback." I said, "I've never played fullback in my life." He said, "You're going to play fullback now." I said, "All right, I'll go watch some YouTube videos." And I went and watched some YouTube videos of old Brazilian fullbacks. And I was crossing the ball down at the Ranger car park and everything. So, yeah, so that's how I kind of went back. I said, I'm not trialling. If Mark McGee offers me a contract, I'll go. And that's kind of how it happened. And it's so mad that part of my role at Woollahra Council, the first 3 months I had to fill in as the dog catcher at times because they'd gone on long service leave. So I'm dog catching as well. I'm dog catching, yep. And 9 months later, I'm playing at Wembley at age 28. So that's, yeah, that's kind of like, it's not an easy achievement, you know, to kind of at 28 then go adapt into the top level, kind of pretty high level British football, is it?
It's lucky you're chasing those dogs, buddy. You keep you going up and down.
And I did a deal with the owner of Doyle's, and which led to the best table in the house and a night with Sir Bobby Charlton.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, took him to dinner, and he was fantastic. Just him and me, and he was a gentleman. I said, "No, not a bad spot. I got you, hey, Bobby." And he said, "If my wife was here, it would be perfect, gentlemen."
I'm pleased you brought up Manchester United, actually, Andy, because I know you played an FA Cup tie against United during your time at Reading. They had a team that included the likes of Keane and Giggs and Cantona, Peter Schmeichel in goal. Who did you mark that day? I know you lost the game.
I marked a person that you haven't brought up.
Go on.
Andy Cole.
Wow.
So in the lead up to the match, it was kind of, I was born in 1966, so it was Cantona. So it was Zola. They had these Nike ads going at the time in England with the 66 stuff and that. And there was a big thing in the I think it was the Sun or the News of the World, one of them, with pictures of Cantona and myself, because I think his mother was Spanish, something like that. So it was, the build-up was that I was going to mark Cantona. But in the end, I marked Cole. And again, you know what? Games in England are always tough. Games in Scotland are always tough. You know, there's very little in it. And the pitch was snow, covered in snow, ice. It was at the old Elm Park. So they had to bring in 5 Rolls-Royce engines and a marquee and pump hot air so that the ground would be soft. By minute 70, it was like the Trump ice rink in Central Park. Yeah. And it was, you know what, to be in the tunnel and look across and see Eric and Schmeichel and all of them, Keane, they're all great players. And you know what, when you're a kid in Australia, you know, we've all kind of, you know, watch the TV and watch Craig Johnson at Wembley and stuff. And you look at things like that and you kind of, at one point you look across and you go, whoa, we're here. You know, and it's kind of, but the funny thing was, although I was older, it was kind of playing against United. I found, you know, that experience where you get to 28, 29 and you're probably maybe not as fit as when you were a kid, but you're kind of seeing things a little easier, there's less nerves, there's so I enjoyed it. We lost, I think it was 2-3 nil. Coley didn't score.
Cole got a hat trick, obviously.
Cole threatened to have me shot
because you're too busy kicking him.
At half time, you'll read it. At half time, you'll read it. Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, he wasn't happy, but but you know, that's what you got to do as a, you know, sometimes defenders have to defend. Just defend. Whoever you're marking, don't score. You've done your job, son.
If you're playing against a striker, if you're playing against a striker and he comes off happy, you've not done your job.
And you know who taught me that? I was loaned to Albacete, the coach Pachin, 6 European Cups. He said, "Son, you remind me of me." He goes, "I played behind Hento, Puskas, De Stefano. I have 6 European Cups. I used to win the ball by any means and give it to them because they were better players than me."
Yeah.
And you just got to know, he goes, if you do that, if you kick people, win the ball, head, whatever you have to do, okay, if you play against someone, don't let him score. And then when you win it, you give it to players that are better players than you. You sit in front of the squad. There you go.
Fair advice. Birch, we're going to push on because we've been going for half an hour already and we've still not got to some of the most interesting stuff post-career. I want to ask you one more question about your playing career, and that's about the Socceroos. You played 21 times for Australia, debuted, as you mentioned, under Eddie Thompson in 1990. Your last was in 1996 against Chile. Is it fair to say that Terry Venables didn't fancy you and that you didn't quite hit it off with him?
Well, he never told me that. I kind of make reference to his coming in. But over that series, we had the home and away series where Venables came in and it was kind of, he was looking at everybody. I was at a time where I was captaining Reading. I was probably in a good, you know, in terms of your career, it was a good time for me. In that, the two series, home and away, you know, I think I was probably in the top 3-4 defenders over the whole series in that particular tournament, and I didn't feel inferior to any of the boys. But you know, there were some few other coaches that you know had maybe more of a say. I would have liked, because I respect Terry Venables, you know, in terms of his career and stuff. I can't knock that. You know, that's wow. Would have been nice if he said, "Look, Andy, you're not playing anymore because of this." But that's, you know, it's life. And to be honest with you, I look back at 21 caps, and you know, I probably shouldn't have even had one cap. You know, born with a defective left knee. You know, so you know, I kind of, the Socceroos bit is because of certain injuries. 21 games was good because I don't think my body was ever right to be able to establish, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 games. And then the younger boys were coming through, Maury and you know, Popper and Horvat, all, you know, all the younger brigade were coming through and they were good players. And, you know, you get to an age where you're 28, 29 and, you know, you yourself know, you know what, it's maybe time to get out of here. But, you know, I wouldn't have felt inferior to anybody if I'd been selected to play against Iran. You know, but I was at an age where I wasn't worth much on the transfer value. So all English agents in the Socceroo Hotel couldn't do anything with me.
Andy, let's move on to your post-playing career. You famously, of course, became David Beckham's Spanish representative when he signed for Real Madrid. How did you get that gig?
I'd finished playing and I kind of wasn't sure what I was going to do. But in the process of playing, I'd kind of helped a few of the boys, Socceroo boys, Mark Schwarzer and Tony Popovich, get to Palace and where'd Schwarzer go? Bradford.
Bradford, yeah.
Initially, yeah.
So Mark was through a fellow agent after we roomed at a game, a Socceroo match, and Popper was more a recommendation. Now, Terry Bullivant, who was my manager at Reading, said, listen, there's a kid in Japan, young Socceroos, Ollie, whatever. If you say there's a problem with his foot or something like that, toe or something, but if you say, Andy, if you say grab him, Tony Popovich will become a Crystal Palace player. And I said, gaffer, grab him. That's how he was. So, yeah, that was kind of that led into people started going, man, you put a suit on and be an agent. And so I got a meeting. The lady that ran the bar at Reading was Sue Roberts, and she was the head of Fosters and Courage in the UK. And she said, I'll get you a meeting with David Beckham's agent. If you get more than 5 minutes, you'll have done well. So I rolled up to Mayfair office, the greatest sports marketing company in the world. The top six clients were Beckham, Owen, Gerard, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. And she said, if you get 5 minutes, you'll have done well. I called her about an hour later. I said, Tony's making me a coffee. Yeah, so that was it. And it was kind of, you know, how do you go in and impress someone like this? You know, first thing he says is, do you have a business degree, a marketing degree, this and that? I said, no, but this ain't rocket science, Tony, okay? You've got four Victoria's Secret models manning your phones, okay, for billion-dollar deals, million-dollar deals that come into you every day because of the talent. It's not, you know, there's no secret here. If you have Beckham, everything comes to you. If you have, so, you know, they make it sound like it's rocket science, but you get the good talent, the brands will seek you. And that's how it kind of was. But you know what? And he gave me a test as well. He said, look, he said, I want Kuhl and Viduka, because they were at the time with IMG International, which was kind of like, in the United States, they were a rival to SFX. And there's a story on both of them. And, you know, it's not my style. I've never have tapped up anybody else's player. So I never tapped up Harry. And Viduka, we met in Leeds, but he was over management company. He doesn't care about marketing and stuff. It's just like, yeah, I had no interest, like, I went up there, this catalogue, that pictures of Jordan, Beckham, and this and that, and I give it to the big man, and like, so disinterested, he was so disinterested in the whole thing that after about 30 seconds, I said,
when's the next game?
I said, Mark, give me that back, mate. Yeah, so he'd read about one paragraph. I said, Mark, give it back. Let's just have lunch and have a good day. And he moved on. He'd done his Leeds deal, and Mark's Mark, you know. So good lad. But
so let me ask you about David Beckham, Andy. How did you get the gig? How did the two of you get along? Did you have a good working and personal relationship as well?
Yeah, fantastic. I got it because part of my interview with Tony Stevens, I said, how do I impress this guy? So I photocopied, put together, printed a world map. And in every country, I put the name of someone that I could call direct to find out who the best kid in that country was for scouting purposes. So I started with Argentina. I put Maradona. Then I started going through, and I've got Colombia, Valderrama. But when he's going like this, he's looking at it, and he's going, He goes, you can call these guys? I go, yes, Tony. And we've got Spain, this and that. And that's around that time is when we started. And he said, you speak fluent Spanish? I said, yeah, and Italian and Portuguese. And he's going like this, and he's, but I haven't got a marketing degree or a business degree. So that's how it kind of worked. And then I went on a tour because the Australian office looked after Billy Slater, Lockyer, all that. So I brought over one of the rugby league agents, and Billy Slater and Lockyer's agent came around with me to all the clubs. And we did a tour of Italy and Spain. That was a year before Beckham went to Madrid, and it was basically kind of putting the names of English players into the Spanish clubs. And a year before Beckham went, I met at the Bernabeu with Jorge Valdano and Emilio Butragueño, and I gave them three names, Beckham, Owen, and Woodgate, and all three eventually signed for
Real. They signed all three.
Yes. So that was kind of how it worked, and we came into the office. We had a couple of mutual friends that had played for Reading, for this and that, and Grant Brebner kind of knew Beckham, and I played with him at Reading. So kind of it's a small world, the football world, and it was... I said, listen, I know, you know, when you're around people at that level, it's insanity. It's you will read, when you read this book, you just go, wow, does this happen? Does this happen? And so I just said, listen, I'm going to ride with you and I'm cool. You need to know I'm cool. That's how it worked. And we kind of, yeah, we got on great. We, you know, in fact, the first chapter of the book is, if you read David's, this one that he gave me, that chapter one is landing in Madrid, the first day arriving in Madrid to sign. And that chapter is all about that day, the signing, the Bernabeu. And that's chapter one in his book is Through His Eyes. Chapter one in my book is that same chapter, that same day, Through My Eyes.
Andy, the tabloids pursued you and Beckham, well, obviously more Beckham than you, with the greatest respect, relentlessly throughout the years that you worked with David. It must have been very, very difficult to deal with. And I know that you said that a lot of your time with Beckham was spent just really putting out spot fires all over the place.
The Beckham thing, after he left SFX to go to the Spice Girls management, a lot of crap went down around the world from America. You know, they'd lost the biggest superstar on the planet. I got offered probably in today's money $5 to $6 million to divulge information on David Beckham, on Victoria Beckham and the kids and the whole family. Personal, private, everything, around $5 to $6 million. I got arrested in Reading, and
you got arrested in Reading.
For it's in the book, right?
Yeah.
So I got into trouble in Reading, okay, as part of an addiction I had, and the paper said, "This is the money. This story will never see daylight if you talk about David." But you know what? It's been a real tough one, this one, because the papers can write whatever they want, whatever they want, and they can destroy people. They destroy people. And they then, 10 years later, 5 years later, give you 10, 20, 30 grand and an apology on page 44, but you're destroyed, you know, the capacity to make a living, your good character. And so I'm going to debunk everything that's written out there, because everything that's been written is actually false, is not true. It did not happen that day. And it was at a time where I was suffering from substance abuse. which I'm ashamed and embarrassed about, to be honest with you. But, you know, you've got to own it. And I own getting better and beating it. And it was just circumstances that a lot happened and I was not privy to it. And about 3 years ago, Janie and I got an email from Scotland Yard, and it changed everything. And it kind of, a lot of powers have a lot of power. And if you don't play their game, you know, it's, and they link up with police, they link up with management, you know, companies. It's because the sports companies have all the great players. And so they have power with the newspapers. So it's very hard to explain, but it's
sort of some of the stuff that we saw sort of leak out through the Levinson inquiry a few years ago. Is that the sort of stuff we're talking about?
Look, it's because of the court. The court kind of resolvement. You know, I'm not privy to say what newspapers, you know, it's not rocket science. Yeah. But, you know, they're all at it. You know, they're all at it. Some don't exist now. You know, some make up stuff. Like, it's totally made up just to try and nail you so that you talk. You get surveilled. For 5 years I was surveilled, had voicemails, emails stolen. You know, it's not good. You start thinking you're going nuts. You know, there's things on your phone, and I thought that was on there. I haven't touched it. Then you think you're going nuts.
Andy, it's a fascinating tale. The book is going to be a fascinating read. It's being launched in April. I think Craig Foster is launching your book. We're going to finish off with one Twitter question because we've gone on far too long today. This comes in from JF. It is our question of the week, $100 Outback Steakhouse voucher coming to you, JF. Will you be involved in Canberra's A-League team if they get their bid accepted? And who are the best players out of Canberra you've worked with? I'm guessing Tom Rogic might be one.
Canberra A-League team, I get excited by it and then nothing happens. So I'm not even going to get excited about it. Canberra's getting an A-League team. Craig Moore's going to come in. Everyone's coming into it like, and then nothing happens. Nothing. So I'm a Canberra Raiders rugby league supporter. That's it. And the Brumbies. Brumbies and the Raiders. Best players out of Canberra. Simonic, Rogic. I'd like to include myself there.
I think that's fair.
Valeri. So I would say those.
You've got to throw Zelic in there. He's from Canberra, no?
Sorry. Yes, he is from Canberra. He was born in Sydney, but yes, he is from Canberra. So obviously Ned's in there. There's 5-6. You know, guys like Top or Stanley, you know, great careers, you know, at this level. But certainly George Coulter, I played for QPR, and people don't know about them. So part of my book was that as well, to kind of like, you know, it's, if you don't know your history, you don't know where you're going. If you don't know where you are, you don't know where you, you know, or where you've been, you don't know where you're going. So it's a fantastic read. I think you will really like it. And for me, it's been really spiritual. And, you know, there's a lot of demons that come into play when big powers are involved, and you know, to get some sort of vindication, and
it's a bit cathartic, hey?
Yeah, and start kind of like, you know, it's Maury probably doesn't even know, but I spent 9 months in South America as the chief scout for the Socceroos. Everything you did at ANZ Stadium, that was my dossier.
Did I get it? Good on you, Bert.
Yeah, and you won't believe it. When you read this, you will laugh so much. I got sent to Colombia. That was my base camp. Okay. It's like the Beatles wrote Yellow Submarine off their chops, didn't they?
Bert, it's going to be a fascinating read. It's going to be a fascinating read. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time today. Some great stories. They'll all be included in the book, I have no doubt. And it is out in April, Riding Shotgun, the story of Andy Bernal. Great to see you and to talk to you, Birch. Thanks so much, mate.
Thank you, and love to all of
you. Cheers, Birchie.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Stay safe, boys.
And that is us for another week. Join us again next week for more Shim, Spider, and so much more. See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.